Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots nonprofit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on KX93.5.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
So as you know, this is a show about our moods, our minds, and our real lives. And I used to air live every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. And now I am on every Monday evening at 8 p.m., which is awesome for me because getting up on Sunday mornings was not always the easiest thing to do. And I think my guests were probably be more grateful to be coming in the evening. And we can talk about some topics that are a little more adult, shall I say, maybe than on a Sunday morning. So over the break, I was, sitting on my phone, watching TV, exercising, all that fun stuff. But I kept seeing all these articles and posts come up about the new R. Kelly docuseries on Lifetime called Surviving R. Kelly. And I got to say, it's pretty difficult to watch, but it is very powerful. And I think extremely important that we continue to have a conversation about what sexual assault and domestic abuse and those, you know, experiences are like for everyone, really. So I'm going to start the show by saying this is going to be a show with adult content. And if you have a child or a minor in the room that you would like to keep from hearing this topic around a sexual assault, this will be a good time to remove them. All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to play the trailer for you regarding the docuseries. And just to give you a little taste in case you haven't heard, maybe you've been under a rock or something, I don't know, but it's pretty fascinating stuff. So I'm going to play the trailer and then I'll be right back.
There's a difference between R. Kelly and Robert. R. Kelly is this fun, laughing, loving guy. But Robert is the devil.
R. Kelly is at the top of the charts, but he may be in for a fall. He was arrested today on 21 counts of child pornography.
Kelly is accused of videotaping himself having sex with an underage girl.
Taking advantage of minors will not be tolerated.
Jurors found him not guilty on all charges.
Robert has said all along he would be cleared of these terrible charges.
Shame on you!
Shame on you!
Shame on you!
Shame on you!
Mute R. Kelly!
Mute R. Kelly!
Mute R. Kelly!
We got a tip that she's here.
She's not in
there. R. Kelly has denied accusations that he's holding women against their will in a sex cult.
James said he loved you so much.
I should have never introduced her to him. I should have never introduced my family to him.
He's the puppet master.
It was very scary because I knew at that moment I had a secret.
Sparkle is alleged to have received significant payment.
I didn't take the money because I can't be bought. He ain't a monster by himself. It took some help.
I'm just ready to get the hell out of there.
Black women don't get the same recognition as our white counterparts. And I wish that would change.
A grown man, 50-something years old. That's not acceptable, nowhere. Nowhere.
And as I said before the little bit there, that was the trailer from the docuseries on Lifetime, Surviving R. Kelly. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the documentary and the docuseries and sort of the history. So there have been decades of accusations against R. Kelly, starting with his 1994 marriage to his then 15-year-old protege, Aaliyah, who was a singer who was really skyrocketing to fame before her death in a plane crash in 2001. Allegations surfaced again in 2002 when a videotape surfaced that allegedly showed him having sex with a 14-year-old girl. And in 2008, he was acquitted on 14 counts of child pornography. Last year, the Washington Post published an investigation in which six women said R. Kelly was abusive toward them. And to be honest, more seem to be coming out every day. Now, there's a lot of discussion about how did this happen for so long? And why was there not the amount of backlash there should have been? And so also people are saying, well, why didn't those girls just leave? Why did their families let them go hang out with an adult man? And to be honest, it's a pretty complicated picture to understand how something like that occurs. So he's remained popular and largely not faced criminal consequences. And one of the questions is that because his accusers are black or black women? Rebecca Epstein, she's a researcher at Georgetown University, and she says, yes, it's because these women are women of color. She co-authored a 2017 study that found that black girls are viewed by adults as more sexually mature than white girls in the same peer group. And as a result, when black girls are victims of sexual assault, they are much less likely to be believed by those who see them as older than they actually are. And she says, what our research indicates is that black girls face even greater skepticism by the figures that wield such authority over their lives than other victims of sexual violence. And she's the executive director at the Law School Center on Poverty and Inequality. Now, I do want to say also that R. Kelly has denied all of these claims. And so these are obviously, alleged statements, but this is what we are hearing, okay? So regardless of the race of victims, only 230 of every 1,000 sexual assaults are reported to police. And that's according to the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. And while many victims of sexual assault are doubted, black victims seem to have it much worse. Now, when I started to really, dive into this topic more, I think it's a very complicated one, and certainly one I cannot cover in an hour, or probably in 10 hours, because I think it's really about race and culture and celebrity and a history of abuse, frankly, for boys and girls, for abusers and victims. And, this epidemic of child abuse and domestic violence are complicated problems to solve. Now, as I say that, I want to talk a little bit about some stats on child abuse and domestic violence, and then hopefully wrap it up with why people stay, because I think this is a conversation that if you've never had a relationship that was dangerous or controlling or unsafe, it may be difficult for you to understand why a person would stay. But one of the things that comes out in the docuseries is that it is reported in the docuseries by R. Kelly's brother that R. Kelly was molested for several years, as was his brother. And we know that children who are sexually abused are more likely to become potentially abusers themselves. Certainly that is not, nowhere near always the case, but it definitely is one of the risk factors. So let me give you just a few stats on child abuse, because I think the root of all of this is coming from broken childhoods that set us up to have often broken adult lives. The United States has one of the worst records among industrialized nations, losing an average between 4 and 7 children every single day to child abuse and child neglect. And a report of child abuse is made every 10 seconds. So every 10 seconds, 10 times in the next minute and a half, 10 times as we continue to talk about this in just the last few seconds, there are children who are being reportedly abused. Okay, so on average, 24 people per minute are victims of rape, physical violence, or stalking by an intimate partner, in the United States. That's more than 12 million women and men over the course of a year. Females ages 18 to 24 and 25 to 34 years old generally experience the highest rates of intimate partner violence, which you might also hear referred to as IPV. From 1994 to 2010, about 4 in 5 victims of intimate partner violence were female. Now, nearly 1 in 5 women and 1 in 71 men have been raped in their lifetime, 1 in 5. So think about your 5 girlfriends that you know, or the five little girls that you know, and imagine what that looks like for them. And let's be super clear, this is not about socioeconomic status or what neighborhood you live in. This happens in every culture, in every class, and every race. Nearly 1 in 10 women in the U.S. have been raped by an intimate partner in their lifetime. 1 in 10 raped by an intimate partner. This is someone that you've already decided to be in a relationship with. This is not someone that grabbed you off the street, which, as we know, you know, attacks happen as well. But there's a large majority happening in the somewhat supposedly safe places in our relationships. There is a common link between domestic violence and child abuse. About 40% report domestic violence that was in their home. And one study in North America found that children who were exposed, this is your child now watching you if you're being abused, children who were exposed to violence in the home were 15 times more likely to be physically and or sexually assaulted than the national average. So it also puts them at risk for being hurt. So your kids are watching, our kids are watching, whether even if you're just being, you know, verbally abusive, as we say, or emotionally abusive, that counts. It's not just about what you're doing with your body or your hands. All of these things affect our children's lives and our lives. So if you go on to, I'll give you a couple websites you can go on to and look at them at more stats for domestic violence and child abuse. It is staggering. There were so many, I'm sure I've already read too many. You know, there were so many, I felt overwhelmed by trying to make sense of them. But I think where it also hit me is that the girls that R. Kelly is accused of stalking and assaulting and pulling into his world were girls who were often 13, 14 years old. He was notoriously known to hang out at local high schools. And it is still alleged that there are girls who are very much minors and underage with him. So, you know, I have a bunch of teenagers in my house, about four at any given time. And, think about that, in terms of teenage statistics, 1 in 10 high school students has experienced physical violence from a dating partner in the last year. 1 in 10. About 1 in 5 women and nearly 1 in 7 men whoever experienced rape, physical violence, and or stalking by an intimate partner first experienced some form of violence between the ages of 11 and 17. So it doesn't matter if you live in Newport or Laguna. It doesn't mean that your child or young daughter or even son who is dating someone because we live here that they're safe from these things. And guess what? They often don't tell us. They don't tell people because they're embarrassed, because they're afraid that you won't like their partner anymore, their boyfriend or their girlfriend anymore. And they often have no one to turn to. And then just one more last statistic, 43% of dating college women, 43% report experiencing violent and abusive dating behaviors, including physical, sexual, technological, verbal, or controlling abuse. So there's a bunch more stats, as I said, but this is something we have to talk about, and it's an ugly topic, and it's not a topic I like to have my topics be all about loving yourself more and those types of things. And I think you'll find that I probably, if you look at so far what I've done, I do tend to lean that way, but I also don't want to shy away from things that I'm very passionate about and things that I think need to change. All right. So just to give you some impacts of abuse, because, you know, if we talk about R. Kelly, If he truly was sexually abused by a family member, and this was over a period of time, you know, it's hard to find compassion for him because, you know, lots of children who are abused do not become abusers, but it does make sense, right? People don't typically become that way for no reason. So when you are a victim of child abuse, you are much more at risk for obviously being abused yourself as an adult. You are much more at risk for becoming an alcoholic or having alcohol abuse issues, for having significant illicit drug abuse problems, for smoking and drinking at a very early age, which, as we know, sets you up to use for a much longer period of time, for depression and suicide. You are at risk for having multiple sexual partners, which can often result in sexually transmitted diseases and unwanted pregnancies. Early initiation of sexual activity, which is how a girl you know, these girls that were being taken in, I have to wonder, and no one's, I can't seem to find articles about it so far, but what was in these girls' histories that also set them up to be able to have access to an adult man, to think that his behaviors were okay, and for their parents to have let them hang out with a 31-year-old man, which I think is what R. Kelly was at the time Aaliyah was 14. Now, just before I switch into why people abuse and sort of understanding why they stay, I do want to let you know that the National Child Abuse Hotline, is 1-800-4-A-CHILD. That's 1-800-422-4453. And also let you know that you can make anonymous, unless you're a mandated reporter like I am and many other people in the health and helping professions, you can make an anonymous report. It could be a neighbor or someone that you know. You don't have to know a whole lot. I will be honest that Protective Services isn't always the most predictable agency. And there have been times in my history as a psychologist where I know of or have been exposed to cases that we thought for sure they wouldn't take, and they do, and cases that we were absolutely sure they would take, and they didn't. So they're overwhelmed. It's a complicated job, and I have great respect for what they do. But I will say that even that isn't always the answer, I know. But just to give you the Orange County Child Protective Services number, should you know someone, is 714-940-1000. And then there's also 800-207-4464. And that's a 24-hour hotline 7 days a week. Okay, so really quickly, I'm just going to give you a little bit about why people abuse other people and who can be in relationships that are abusive. And then I would like to play you another about 15-minute clip of a great TED Talk about why women stay in violent relationships. Okay, I know it's a lot of talking tonight. All right, so domestic violence and abuse stem from a desire to gain and maintain power and control over the partner. And so people like this believe that they have the right to control and restrict their partners, and it gives them this sort of great feeling of power to do so. They often believe that their own feelings and needs should be the priority in their relationships, and so they use abusive tactics to dismantle equality and make their partners feel less valuable. Now, I just read that, if you could tell, but let me just tell you what dismantling equality looks like. So what that looks like is you meet someone, and of course they do not immediately start abusing you, although it can emerge within a few weeks and pretty quickly. What they do is they start to slowly chip away at your sense of self, your sense of independence. Maybe it's financial. Maybe it's they tap into your needs, and they sort of begin to dismantle your sense of who you are. And if you will, chip away at who you are and make you much more vulnerable to abuse. And so maybe it starts with a comment, or you're in the car and for the first time they grab your hair and you're like, wait a minute, what was that? Oh my God, I lost control. I'm so sorry. It won't happen again. You know, that's the cycle of violence we hear a lot about, but it really does start slowly. It can escalate very quickly though, once it starts. And so we want to make sure that we know what the signs are, and we're going to talk about that. But really, anyone can be a victim of abuse, right? It doesn't matter, as I said before, where you come from. Lots and lots of women can tell you stories about this one time I had a relationship with a controlling partner. And frankly, lots of men can tell you the same thing. Women are also violent towards men. So I know the statistics lean heavily towards women, but I do not want to discount men who are abused, nor do I want to discount the LGBTQ community, where sexual violence and assault is very, very similar. There are some slight variances in some ways with regard to that, but same thing, same pain, same hurt. So if you want more information about that, I can also give you, and I will at the end of the show, where you can learn more about that. All right, so in terms of the warning signs of domestic violence, I think we will come back and talk about those just really quickly after I play a clip I have for you. So this is a clip. Let me just get it loaded up as we're talking here. I had it here. Okay, it's called Why Domestic Violence Victims Don't Leave by Leslie Morgan Steiner.
I'm here today to talk about a disturbing question, which has an equally disturbing answer. My topic is the secrets of domestic violence. And the question I'm going to tackle is the one question everyone always asks. Why does she stay? Why would anyone stay with a man who beats her? I'm not a psychiatrist, a social worker, or an expert in domestic violence. I'm just one woman with a story to tell. I was 22. I had just graduated from Harvard College. I'd moved to New York City for my first job as a writer and editor at 17 Magazine. I had my first apartment, my first little green American Express card, and I had a very big secret. My secret was that I had this gun loaded with hollow point bullets pointed at my head by the man who I thought was my soulmate many, many times. The man who I loved more than anybody on earth held a gun to my head and threatened to kill me more times than I can even remember. I'm here to tell you the story of crazy love, a psychological trap disguised as love, one that millions of women and even a few men fall into every year. It may even be your story. I don't look like a typical domestic violence survivor. I have a BA in English from Harvard College, an MBA in marketing from Wharton Business School. I spent most of my career working for Fortune 500 companies, including Johnson & Johnson, Leo Burnett, and The Washington Post. I've been married for almost 20 years to my second husband, and we have three kids together. My dog is a black lab, and I drive a Honda Odyssey minivan. So my first message for you is that domestic violence happens to everyone. All races, all religions, all income and education levels. It's everywhere. And my second message is that everyone thinks domestic violence happens to women, that it's a women's issue. Not exactly. Over 85% of abusers are men. And domestic abuse happens only in intimate, interdependent, long-term relationships. In other words, in families. The last place we would want or expect to find violence, which is one reason domestic abuse is so confusing. I would have told you myself that I was the last person on earth who would stay with a man who beats me. But in fact, I was a very typical victim because of my age. I was 22. And in the United States, women ages 16 to 24 are three times as likely to be domestic violence victims as women of other ages. And over 500 women and girls this age are killed every year by abusive partners, boyfriends and husbands in the United States. I was also a very typical victim because I knew nothing about domestic violence, its warning signs or its patterns. I met Connor on a cold, rainy January night. He sat next to me on the New York City subway. And he started chatting me up. He told me two things. One was that he, too, had just graduated from an Ivy League school, and that he worked at a very impressive Wall Street bank. But what made the biggest impression on me that first meeting was that he was smart and funny. And he looked like a farm boy. He had these big cheeks, these big apple cheeks, and this wheat blonde hair, and he seemed so sweet. One of the smartest things Connor did from the very beginning was to create the illusion that I was the dominant partner in the relationship. He did this, especially at the beginning, by idolizing me. We started dating, and he loved everything about me, that I was smart, that I'd gone to Harvard, that I was passionate about helping teenage girls and my job. He wanted to know everything about my family and my childhood, my hopes and dreams. Connor believed in me as a writer and a woman in a way that no one else ever had. And he also created a magical atmosphere of trust between us by confessing his secret, which was that as a very young boy starting at age 4, he had been savagely and repeatedly physically abused by his stepfather. And the abuse had gotten so bad that he had had to drop out of school in 8th grade, even though he was very smart. And he'd spent almost 20 years rebuilding his life. Which is why that Ivy League degree and the Wall Street job and his bright, shiny future meant so much to him. If you had told me that this smart, funny, sensitive man who adored me would one day dictate whether or not I wore makeup, how short my skirts were, where I lived, what jobs I took, who my friends were, and where I spent Christmas, I would have laughed at you. Because there was not a hint of violence or control or anger in Connor at the beginning. I didn't know that the first stage in any domestic violence relationship is to seduce and charm the victim. I also didn't know that the second step is to isolate the victim. Now, Connor did not come home one day and announce, you know, hey, all this Romeo and Juliet stuff has been great, but I need to move into the next phase where I isolate you and I abuse you. So I need to get you out of this apartment where the neighbors can hear you scream and out of this city where you have friends and family and coworkers who can see the bruises. Instead, Connor came home one Friday evening and he told me that he had quit his job that day, his dream job. And he said that he had quit his job because of me, because I had made him feel so safe and loved that he didn't need to prove himself on Wall Street anymore. And he just wanted to get out of the city and away from his abusive, dysfunctional family and move to a tiny town in New England where he could start his life over with me by his side. Now, the last thing I wanted to do was leave New York and my dream job. But I thought you made sacrifices for your soulmate. So I agreed, and I quit my job, and Connor and I left Manhattan together. I had no idea I was falling into crazy love, that I was walking headfirst into a carefully laid physical, financial, and psychological trap. The next step in the domestic violence pattern is to introduce the threat of violence and see how she reacts. And here's where those guns come in. As soon as we moved to New England, you know that place where Connor was supposed to feel so safe? He bought 3 guns. He kept one in the glove compartment of our car. He kept one under the pillows on our bed. And the third one he kept in his pocket at all times. And he said that he needed those guns because of the trauma he'd experienced as a young boy. He needed them to feel protected. But those guns were really a message for me. And even though he hadn't raised a hand to me, my life was already in grave danger every minute of every day. Connor first physically attacked me 5 days before our wedding. It was 7 a.m. I still had on my nightgown. I was working on my computer trying to finish a freelance writing assignment, and I got frustrated. And Connor used my anger as an excuse to put both of his hands around my neck and to squeeze so tightly that I could not breathe or scream. And he used the chokehold to hit my head repeatedly against the wall. 5 days later, the 10 bruises on my neck had just faded, and I put on my mother's wedding dress and I married him. Despite what had happened, I was sure we were going to live happily ever after because I loved him and he loved me so much. And he was very, very sorry. He had just been really stressed out by the wedding and by becoming a family with me. It was an isolated incident and he was never going to hurt me again. It happened twice more on the honeymoon. The first time, I was driving to find a secret beach. And I got lost. And he punched me in the side of my head so hard that the other side of my head repeatedly hit the driver's side window. And then a few days later, driving home from our honeymoon, he got frustrated by traffic and he threw a cold Big Mac in my face. Connor proceeded to beat me once or twice a week for the next 2.5 years of our marriage. I was mistaken in thinking that I was unique and alone in this situation. 1 in 3 American women experiences domestic violence or stalking at some point in her life. And the CDC reports that 15 million children are abused every year. 15 million. So actually, I was in very good company. Back to my question. Why did I stay? The answer is easy. I didn't know he was abusing me. Even though he held those loaded guns to my head, pushed me downstairs, threatened to kill our dog, pulled the key out of the car ignition as I drove down the highway, poured coffee grinds on my head as I dressed for a job interview, I never once thought of myself as a battered wife. Instead, I was a very strong woman in love with a deeply troubled man, and I was the only person on earth who could help Connor face his demons. The other question everybody asks is, why doesn't she just leave? Why didn't I walk out? I could have left any time. To me, this is the saddest and most painful question that people ask, because we victims know something you usually don't. It's incredibly dangerous to leave an abuser, because the final step in the domestic violence pattern is kill her. Over 70% of domestic violence murders happen after the victim has ended the relationship, after she's gotten out, because then the abuser has nothing left to lose. Other outcomes include long-term stalking, even after the abuser remarries, denial of financial resources, and manipulation of the family court system to terrify the victim and her children, who are regularly forced by family court judges to spend unsupervised time with the man who beat their mother. And still we ask, why doesn't she just leave? I was able to leave because of one final sadistic beating that broke through my denial. I realized that the man who I loved so much was going to kill me if I let him. So I broke the silence. I told everyone. The police, my neighbors, my friends and family, total strangers. And I'm here today because you all helped me. We tend to stereotype victims as grisly headlines, self-destructive women, damaged goods. The question, why does she stay, is code for some people for it's her fault for staying. As if victims intentionally choose to fall in love with men intent upon destroying us. But since publishing Crazy Love, I have heard hundreds of stories from men and women who also got out, who learned an invaluable life lesson from what happened, and who rebuilt lives, joyous, happy lives, as employees, wives, and mothers, lives completely free of violence. Like me. Because it turns out that I'm actually a very typical domestic violence victim and a typical domestic violence survivor. I remarried a kind and gentle man. We have those three kids. I have that black lab, and I have that minivan. What I will never have again, ever, is a loaded gun held to my head by someone who says that he loves me. Now, right now, maybe you're thinking, wow, this is fascinating. Or, wow, how stupid was she? But this whole time, I've actually been talking about you. I promise you, there are several people listening to me right now who are currently being abused, or who were abused as children, or who are abusers themselves. Abuse could be affecting your daughter, your sister, your best friend right now. I was able to end my own crazy love story by breaking the silence. I'm still breaking the silence today. It's my way of helping other victims. And it's my final request of you. Talk about what you heard here. Abuse thrives only in silence. You have the power to end domestic violence simply by shining a spotlight on it. We victims need everyone. We need every one of you to understand the secrets of domestic violence. Show abuse the light of day by talking about it with your children, your coworkers, your friends and family. Recast survivors as wonderful, lovable people with full futures. Recognize the early signs of violence and conscientiously intervene, de-escalate it, show victims a safe way out. Together, we can make our beds, our dinner tables, and our families the safe and peaceful oases they should be. Thank you.
And welcome back to Moody with Dr. Sage. I'm your host, Kim Sage. We are talking about domestic violence and child abuse. We are talking about a little bit about the R. Kelly scandal. So if you're just tuning in, this is a topic that is probably for a more mature audience, although as our speaker was just saying, please do talk to your children in age-appropriate ways about violence, about control, about healthy relationships and what they look like. It's extremely important that we just don't assume that because our marriage doesn't have domestic violence, that our daughters and our sons may not find themselves in violent relationships or frankly, you know, potentially maybe being the abusers in relationships that are not healthy. So I think it is about shining the light. And as I said, as I started at the top of the show, what really spurred this topic tonight, which is a much more serious topic, but really a very, very important one and one I'm very passionate about, is my viewing of the R. Kelly docuseries, Surviving R. Kelly, and being horrified at the abuse and the control and the manipulation and the brokenness of these women. And knowing that while he's a celebrity and while this may be a certain community that you may not be quite so familiar with, it is happening in every corner of our universe to our world, I should say, to people who are suffering and who are in relationships where violence is showing up. So as we wrap up the show, I just want to go through some warning signs of domestic violence and just a little bit more about why people stay. But before I do that, I want to say one thing, and I'm going to hopefully say it one more time. Leaving a violent relationship is one of the most dangerous things anyone can do. And it is extremely important that you have a safety plan for doing that. If you don't know what a safety plan is, you need to find out before you leave. This means you find people and resources and a plan, because how you leave can make the difference in whether or not you survive. Okay? So I'm going to give you some resources at the end. You can Google safety plan. You can ask shelters and hotlines, but it is extremely important. Okay, so some of the warning signs of domestic violence, because like I said before, you know, our new lovers don't just walk in our lives and start hurting us. It's a systematic process whereby they gain our trust, they pull us in, and then they begin to slowly dismantle this part of this relationship where it was safe and where we had a sense of ourselves, until we wake up one day and we don't have it anymore. So it's not easy to tell at the beginning of a relationship. And in fact, many abusive partners seem absolutely perfect in the early honeymoon stages of a relationship. People will tell you, oh my gosh, he or she was wonderful. They were so supportive. They showed up for me. You know, there were no signs. That's often the case. There are often some signs, and if you're looking, you might find more. But it's not a crazy thing to imagine that you could go from this perfect relationship, in quotes, to a very imperfect one. So possessive and controlling behaviors, they don't always appear overnight, right? So they emerge slowly and they begin to intensify as the relationship grows. And they don't look the same in every relationship. That's because, of course, every relationship is different. But one thing that abusive relationships all have in common is that the abusive partner does many different kinds of things to have power and control over their partner. And so some of the signs might be that this partner of yours is telling you can never do anything right, or they're extremely jealous of your friends and any time that you might spend away from them. They might discourage you and slowly begin to isolate you from friends and family members. They might insult you or demean you or shame you with put-downs. And they can become very controlling around money. They can take your money or refuse to give you money for expenses. They may look or act in a way that is scary to you. They may try to control everything that you do and prevent you from making really any of your own decisions. In fact, even in the R. Kelly docuseries, the girls talk about having to call R. Kelly daddy and having to ask for permission with sort of a security guard to use the bathroom. So of course it didn't happen the first time you met them, but how do they find themselves in that situation, right? It was slow and systematic, and they were frankly probably targets given where they came from and what their personal stories were or the access they had to him. So another sign is they can prevent you from going to school or working. They might destroy your property or threaten to hurt or kill your pets. They can intimidate you with guns or knives or weapons. They can pressure you to have sex when you don't want to, or really push you to do things in that way that's intimate that you do not feel comfortable with. And they can pressure you to drink or use drugs or engage in partying in a way that sort of begins to pull you in. And then you're addicted or you're connected and you think this is how you have fun, and that sets you up. Now, I guess the big question in our last few minutes is, why don't they just leave? It seems so simple. But if you've never been abused, you might not know why. But the truth is, it's pretty complicated. All right. So here's just a few reasons why people don't leave. They might be afraid. They might be afraid of what will happen if they decide to leave. And as I said, leaving is one of the most dangerous things you can ever do in a relationship that has domestic violence in it. They may believe that abuse is normal because maybe they grew up with that. I was listening to a really interesting woman today talk about how her Southern Baptist grandfather used to beat her grandmother. And in their home, it was just sort of the way it went down the line. And so by the time she was, you know, an adult or semi-adult and dating, you know, that's what happened. It was God, it was love, it was abuse, and that's what it looked like. So it can trickle down in that regard. People can, if you are perhaps someone who is gay, you may be afraid if you've not come out yet that the person may out you, and that often happens. That they can make threats. They will out you and reveal your secrets or what you aren't ready to share. Like I said, there are some unique parts around abuse for people of different backgrounds and beliefs and histories and identities, but at the same end of the day, it's all pain, it's all hurt, and it's all not okay. They may use embarrassment or shame, and it's often difficult for people to admit, you know, like this woman, the woman that I let you listen to, or I had playing, I let you, that sounded funny. The person that I was playing earlier, you know, she went to Harvard. She's an executive. She was an editor for 17 Magazine. That doesn't fit, you know, when you look at the R. Kelly docuseries, you could say, well, that's a different situation. It's really not. At the end of the day, it's really not. Often people have low self-esteem, or they love their partner and they think that they can't survive without them because that's sort of what they've been shaped to believe, or they have children they want to keep safe. And, of course, you know, we'll do anything for our children. We will sacrifice and take things we will never take, but for our children, we want to keep them safe. Okay. They may have cultural or religious reasons for staying in relationships. Often very traditional gender roles can support this type of engaging behavior that's not okay. There may be language barriers or immigration status issues which put a person at risk and make it more difficult for them to leave. Certainly they may lack money or resources or support, and they might even have a disability that somehow prevents them from leaving. Certainly anxiety and depression can become extremely overwhelming in those types of situations, making it almost impossible to do anything. And if you're isolated by your partner, you're not going to be able to get help. All right. So as I'm wrapping up our show, I just want to give a last few little bits of information. I know tonight was a difficult topic, but I think it's an incredibly important one. I highly encourage you to find ways to talk to your children about it as they become age appropriate with regard to the issues. And I know that's hard to understand, but you know, it's sort of keeping it to the level that they are able to understand, but also preparing them for what is to come should they begin to start dating. I find that especially middle-aged students, they just like, la, 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 I don't want to hear about this topic. I don't want to know, but I don't want to know. But really, if you think about middle school, you know, this is where our kids are starting to have crushes and starting to engage. We have had a lot of issues with, you know, sending photos and sexting. And so all this is starting in middle school and sometimes earlier, people. It is kind of horrifying the amount of patients I have who are in middle school who have either who have actually been encouraged to send inappropriate pictures and or have done so as a result of pressure. It's pervasive. So it's never really too soon in some way to talk about what's appropriate and what's safe and those types of things. So the National Domestic Violence Hotline is 1-800-799-7233. And I'd like to also give you once again some numbers to report child abuse, because I do believe that child abuse, and the research shows, is often the stem from later abusing adults. But even if it isn't, obviously we want to try to protect innocent people and children. And so the Orange County Protective Services number is 714-940-1000, or their 800 number, which is 800-207-4464. 24-hour hotline you can call there 7 days a week. So thank you for listening to Moody with Dr. Sage. As you know, this is a show about our moods, our minds, and our real lives. And now it gets to air live every Monday night at 8 p.m. instead of every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. And so I'm very excited about the guests I'm going to be bringing on and the topics. And I hope to keep sharing hopefully interesting, inspiring, informative content that will, you know, help you live your best life. So thanks for listening. And remember, everything we talk about is not meant to serve for or to represent a therapeutic relationship, but rather meant to provide information and resources. If you are in need of mental health or support, please reach out and contact a mental health provider or seek support. And on that note, I will see you next Monday night at 8 p.m. I hope you have a beautiful rest of the week and take good care. Thanks a lot for listening.